60 in Fairbanks, Alaska. And you know what's coming up next. That's Alaska Gold Trails. And I have a fine guest waiting online for us, in addition to our weekly contest, in which we will be giving away a 1 troy ounce silver ingot from Oxford Assaying and Refining. So get your tape recorders ready to go, because we'll be back just after sports with Alaska Gold Trails.
Hello again, everyone. For Johnny Holiday, this is Tom McDonald reporting on sports. Pete Rose says he didn't bet on baseball. Commissioner Bart Giamatti believes he did. Whomever you believe, one thing is certain. Pete Rose has been suspended from baseball for life. He can appeal that suspension on this date next year, but there's no guarantee the suspension will be lifted. Did Pete Rose bet on baseball?
What did I say to the fans? Well, the only thing I can really say to the fans is obviously thank them for their support for 28 or 29 years. I love the fans, not only Cincinnati, but of baseball in general. And the only thing I can tell the fans is I did not bet on baseball.
Baseball's all-time leading hitter may never get back into the game because of what the commissioner believes is true.
In the absence of a hearing, and therefore in the absence of any evidence to the contrary, I am confronted by the factual record of Mr. Dowd, and on the basis of that, yes, I have concluded that he bet on baseball.
Pete Rose says he did bet on other sports and told his supporters why he never bet on baseball.
I have too much respect for the game, too much love for the game, and I appreciate how they treated me over the years, both as a player and as a manager.
What about the Hall of Fame? Rose has the credentials to be a unanimous selection, but will the sports writers vote him in?
I did my part to get into the Hall of Fame. It's up to you people who do the voting. You know, I got all the hits and scored all the runs and won all the games. I can't really worry about something that's not in my control.
Shoeless Joe Jackson, like Rose, had the credentials to be elected to the Hall of Fame, but he never was. Shoeless Joe was involved in the Chicago Black Sox scandal in the early 1900s. As for Pete Rose, he's out of baseball for the first time in his adult life, and he faces the possibility of never, ever returning to the game and never receiving the honor that he covets most, and that's election into baseball's Hall of Fame. The Cincinnati Reds held a news conference this afternoon and announced that the new manager of Cincinnati will be Tommy Helms. He'll manage the Reds till the end of the season. For Johnny Holiday and the ABC Information Network, this is Tom McDonald.
In the summertime, when the weather is hot, you can stretch right up and touch the sky. When the weather's fine, we got living on our mind.
Summertime fun.
Picnics in the sun.
Barbecues.
And popsicles, too.
Good time.
Good food.
Good friends.
Fred Meyer.
Sunshine.
Swim time.
Sand toy.
Beach boy.
Catching rays.
Catching waves.
Catching Z.
Catch a fish.
What a catch.
Fred Meyer.
We're having good times, living easy in the summer's really fine.
Summer nights.
Oh, skeeter bites.
Mountain hikes.
Flying kites.
Water fights.
Riding bikes.
Suntans.
Sunsets.
Sunrises.
Fred Meyer.
Boat docks.
Boardwalks.
Ocean's breeze.
Sandy feet.
Flopping thongs.
And sing-alongs.
Summer's things.
You'll find it at Freddy's.
We're always happy. Lots of living, yeah, that's our philosophy.
Good afternoon, folks, and welcome to Alaska Gold Trails. I'm your host, Jim Madonna. This is your radio show on mining in Alaska, past, present, and future. More specifically, folks, gold mining in Alaska's misty past, controversial present, and, of course, mysterious future. I'll be with you here on KFAR 660 on your radio dial each Thursday from 1 to 2 p.m., where we can discuss the entire spectrum of mining in Alaska, from the fascinating and colorful history of the major and minor gold rushes to the most recent gold prospecting and mining techniques. Also, we will have special guests to discuss different frontier and mining related topics. Most of all, my friends, give us a call if you have a question or care to make a comment on mining in Alaska, or maybe you just want to chat for a few minutes or want to share one of your favorite frontier experiences. The number here is 479-TALK. That's 479-8255. Let's talk gold mining through the years along Alaska Gold Trails. Well, the first rattle out of the box, of course, we want to do our weekly contest. The winner of this contest will, of course, receive a 1 troy ounce silver ingot from Oxford Assaying and Refining, located at 208 Wendell Street. Their number is 456-3967. And the question today is, who is located at 452-1751? I want to know who they are, where they are, and of course what they do, and I like a lot of detail about what they do. And so as soon as you find out who is located at that particular number, once again 452-1751, you'll want to give us a call here at KFAR. Our number is 479-TALK. That's 479-8255. That one gave up. So until we get the phone lines working here, we'll do this.
You want to have a great time with the kids? Take them out to Alaskaland Mini Golf at Alaskaland Pioneer Park. They have 8 electrically operated obstacles, and I got to tell you, some of the kids will go crazy. They'll have a great time. You can win free games. You can enjoy the rest of the park. In short, it's an inexpensive way to have a great time. And what a super place for a church, family, or business outing, and of course, special rates for groups of 10 or more. Hey, do yourself a favor. Drop by the Alaskaland Mini Golf Course.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, I can't hear you on the phone. I can just hear you on the radio.
Can you hear me on the phone?
Yeah, I can. Okay. Maybe that's what happened to your last caller. The number you wanted was 452-1751. Is that what
that,
you said?
That's correct.
Okay, well, that's the number for Mount McKinley Mutual Savings Bank.
And where are they located?
They're located at 531 3rd Avenue.
Okay.
And, of course, they got entrances on two streets, actually. One of their entrances on 534th Avenue, because it goes straight through from one street to the next.
Uh-huh. Where's the parking?
The parking is on the 4th Avenue side.
I see.
And I would say, probably call them the only truly local bank in town. Most of the other ones are kind of not really your local type of bank, and this one's much more personable when you go in there and need to do something.
Oh, you like the service there, do you?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And I think what you're trying to say is that they don't have a lot of branches all over the state.
That's right. So uh-huh. when you go to Mount McKinley, you know where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a much better chance that the people you deal with are going to know you also.
Mm-hmm. So there's that personalized treatment.
That's right.
And do you know the year that Mount McKinley went into business? Just get close for me.
Oh, boy.
It's the 1900s. 1965. I won't. 1965. So they initiated Mount McKinley Mutual Savings Bank that year in Fairbanks, Alaska.
Right. And you want to know what services they offer?
Sure.
Okay. Well, they offer, of course, banks are in the business of making loans. So they offer all kinds of loans, real estate, construction, consumer-type loans. They offer services for money market accounts. And you can also save your money there as well as borrow money.
Oh, I see.
So they also offer savings and checking services.
And one thing that they were working with this past year was the fact that you could get loans to build your dream house.
Right. Oh, you know what's one of the biggest things that they offer as a service at that place is they're open on Saturday.
Yeah, they do have that.
Yeah, and there's not many banks that are.
Well, in addition to that, they have some other services which are available on Saturday, more in-depth services that are available on Saturday if you give them a phone call in advance. So I think they have something, some loan department will be open and so forth. So you can take a look at some of those services that are available. And again, no other bank in Fairbanks offers that type of services. But do you know who the first president was?
I sure don't.
You don't know who the first president was?
No, I don't.
Judge Forbes?
That was something I didn't know.
Something I didn't know until Bill Boucher just pointed it out to me. He's a mini historian around here, I think.
Uh-oh.
He knows all the names of all the people. Look, you know what you've done?
I won something.
You won something. You don't know what you won? Huh? You get to take me to lunch. Hey, you won a 1 troy ounce silver ingot from Oxford Assaying and Refining. And you know where Oxford Assaying and Refining is?
Of course. Sure I do.
208 Wendell, right?
That's right.
Hey, and have you been over there before?
Yes, I have.
You have? You know that they have a nice coin display and a jewelry display on hand for their customers?
Yes, I do.
And you know that they sell, in addition to gold coins and silver ingots, that they sell bullion, gold, and silver for investment purposes?
Yes, I do.
And do you know that, you know all these things. Maybe I ought to just have you tell me.
I could have done a commercial for them, too.
Yeah,
huh?
Let me just give you one more point. They have a special quote line. That number is 452-7858, and that's where you phone up and find out the prices of gold or the daily prices of gold, silver, and platinum. So I know the folks out there would like to know about that particular service from Oxford Assaying and Refining. And in addition to that, and you, something that you appreciate is the fact that they sponsor the contest each week right here on Alaska Gold Trails with a 1 troy ounce silver ingot. And I think that's very nice of Oxford Assaying and Refining.
Well, I think so too.
Well, why don't you give me your name? I'll jot it down here. You pop up here to the Washington Plaza at the KFAR studio, pick up your certificate, and then take it over to Oxford and pick up your 1 troy ounce silver ingot. How's that?
That's fine. My name is Jesse.
Jesse?
Yeah.
You've been here before?
Yes, I have.
Okay. Last name, last initial, Jesse?
A.
Okay. Got you down here.
Okay.
So once again, stop by, pick up your certificate, take it over to Oxford, and you know the trail since you've done this before, I believe.
Yes.
And thanks a lot for joining us here on Alaska Gold Trails, Jesse.
Thank you for a great show.
Okay. Bye now.
Okay.
Okay. This afternoon, we're here with my guest, Bill Boucher, and we've had him on before. We've brought him all the way up from the first show that had Bill on. We got him up to age 4, I believe, and then we finally got him into school on the last show that we had him here about 2 weeks ago. And I think we have him in high school at this time playing those games that the people in the remote area of Nome play, such as dog mushing, fishing, or crabbing, and those kinds of things, which Bill participated in. And welcome to Alaska Gold Trails once again, Bill Boucher.
Hi, Jim.
Bill, carrying it on a step farther from the frontier life that you led being born and raised in Nome, what were the activities that you, sport activities that you participated in high school, Bill?
We only had one sport in high school, that was basketball. Naturally, sports in Nome at that time were indoor, and basketball was the logical one. So we played basketball against city teams and military teams. But in those days, we didn't get out, we didn't travel out to other towns, except once a year we'd go to the fur rendezvous in Anchorage. And, of course, that was only if we were the winner of our division. And of course, our division was Nome.
So you didn't travel to any other schools around the Seward Peninsula?
No, at that time we didn't. In fact, well, there weren't any other high schools around the Seward Peninsula at that time.
Well, the we got a call here, Bill, and then we'll be right back with the basketball playing, okay?
Okay.
Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Bill Boucher?
Sure. You got
hey.
A question for him?
Yeah, sure. I was just wondering if Bill wants to talk a little bit about the newspaper in Nome Nugget.
Sure, why not?
Okay, fine.
What would you like? What would you like to know?
Well, no, the Norm Nugget. I know his mother Emily, and she probably had the most employers in Nome, living the Nome Nugget with routes and also street sellers and this and that. And there's been many people that have come from Nome that that's where their business career started. And I was just wondering if Bill wanted to comment a little bit about the newspaper business. We used to fold the newspapers by hand. I think Bill remembers that.
I sure do.
Well, and you used to run the linotype, right?
You bet.
Yeah, right. Did you ever go on the press?
You bet.
Yeah, you remember Clinton Gray, right?
You bet I remember Clint.
Yeah, right. Okay, I just thought you might want to make some comments.
Well, who am I talking to here?
My name is Bill, too.
Bill, too, huh?
Well,
I knew that was coming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your brother Rodney and I were in the same grade.
All right.
Okay. All right. Bill Miller.
Oh, hi, Bill. I remember you.
Yeah, okay.
All right, Billy.
Anyway, I just thought you might want to comment about the way we deliver papers in Nome, you know?
Well, it sounds like you could tell us a lot about that yourself.
Oh, well, they cost 15 cents a piece. You gave a dime to your mom and kept a nickel for yourself. Is that right?
Well, if I did that when I was delivering papers.
Yeah,
so
right.
So did you, right?
Yeah, right.
You betcha. Mm-hmm. That was pretty good money in those days.
Yeah, right, it was.
Did
you buy an ice cream cone for 15 cents.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And a bag of popcorn for a dime.
Yeah, right. 2 bits for the movie.
Oh, yes. I remember when the movie was only a dime.
Yeah. How many times a week did this paper come out?
3 times a week.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good little newspaper, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was the best newspaper in Alaska.
By golly, Billy, I think you're right.
I'll probably get a call from the news miner now.
Could be. That's all right.
Yeah. Okay, real fine, Bill. I just thought you'd just comment a little bit about that, because it was a real good deal for a lot of young people to learn a little bit about business.
So how many years did you work for the Nugget?
Off and on, I would say probably for a good 5 years.
Okay, good.
But, you know, you had to turn your money in.
Sure.
And everybody learned a little bit about business, you know.
That's right.
And so, you remember Chuck Bergstrom?
You bet I do. He's still there.
Sure. He's still there. And I used to be his, kind of right-hand man one time.
Really?
Run his route.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, okay, Bill.
Hey,
you just tell him a little bit about Nome Nugget.
I will.
And,
you're doing a very good job yourself.
Well, whatever. Okay, you just tell him about Nome Nugget and the way we used to run the paper route.
Okay, Bill.
Okay, thanks, Bill.
Thank you for the call, Bill.
Well, bye.
Well, since we're on the subject, Bill, let's start. When you first got, did your parents, they started the Nome Nugget?
No, the Nome Nugget was started way back in I think it was 1900. I'm almost sure. I'd have to go back to my own records to be sure of that. But I think, well, my mother and father bought it during the Second World War. And they operated it until my mother sold out in, let's see, must have been about 1963, I think she finally sold out. But, I got started at the Nugget pretty early. Of course, one of my first jobs was sweeping the floor. And that's a job you do pretty regular in a print shop, a newspaper, especially an old unpainted wooden floor. And I graduated through all of the different parts of the newspaper business there. In those days, we had to pour hot lead castings for ads and, the large print, things
mm-hmm.
like that. And we did most of the, all of the little work that we did was all by hand type,
mm-hmm.
picking letter at a time and putting it in a in a little tray.
This was just for the ads?
This was for ads and job printing that we did. We did a lot of envelopes and checks and letterheads, you know, all kinds of things like that. We printed up, we did most of the printing for Nome, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, I did a lot of job printing. We had a little Chandler Price hand job printing machine, and learned to work that, and the big press. We had a Mealy horizontal, I believe, and I ran the big press, and I ran the linotype, and just about everything. My mother wouldn't let me write editorials. She figured that was her job. But I did some writing too.
But not editorials?
No, that was her job.
Did you ever write an editorial?
Indeed I did.
Oh, you did? For the Nome Nugget?
No, I never wrote an editorial for the Nome Nugget.
Uh-huh. She kept a bridle on you.
Well, yeah. She was the editor, and she figured that was her job.
Uh-huh. So
I didn't get to write editorials until I was the editor of the Polar Star.
How nice. Tell me, how long you worked at the Nome Nugget? What year did you start, and what year did you finish up there?
Well, let's see. I started at the Nugget, it was right after the Second World War. And I worked there off and on all the way through school, all the way through high school, until I graduated in 52. And then when I was back for the summer, I'd help out when I had time and so forth.
Mm-hmm. How long did your family own the paper?
During the Second World War, I don't remember what year, 42, 43, somewhere in there, until my mother sold it in 63.
I see.
So about 20 years.
Uh-huh. And were there any other papers around the Seward Peninsula that you knew about during that time or before that time that are of interest?
Well, before that time, there were a number of them.
Uh-huh.
The Nugget actually is probably still the oldest continuously running newspaper in Alaska. Started about 1900 and has never ceased.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just continued right along. There were other newspapers in Nome at the time. You know, during the early years and so forth, various people have started up small newspapers, and they fell by the wayside. The Nugget has stayed in business. The first newspaper that I'm aware of in northwestern Alaska wasn't in Nome, was in Grantley Harbor up near Teller. It happened in 1866, 67, when the Western Union crew was wintering at Grantley Harbor while they were building the telegraph line that was to extend from the U.S. mainland across Canada and Alaska to the Bering Straits. Then they were going to lay a cable across the straits through and then down through Siberia and Russia into Europe. The Europeans had built their end of it right up to the other end, and we had built ours up to Grantley Harbor, and the following summer they were going to complete it. But that winter, Cyrus Field was successful in laying an Atlantic cable, transatlantic cable, which made the whole project obsolete.
Mm-hmm. Bill, I'd like to, we've got a call here, and as soon as we get back from the call, I'd like to talk a little bit more about the role that transatlantic cable and the cable across the Seward Peninsula played in the discovery of gold on the Seward Peninsula. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you if you knew anything about a company called Nelson Brothers up there in Nome that operated in the earlier 1900s. My grandmother gone up there and worked for them in about 1904 to 1907, 1908.
Well, there were some Nelsons there. When I was a kid, there was a fellow named Grant Nelson that did a lot of mining up in the area, and they had the waterway, delivered water and did a little freighting. Would that be the same outfit?
It could have been. It was Nelson Brothers. She moved up there after my grandfather was died in a typhoid epidemic down in Bothell, Washington, and she moved up there, farmed all the, about seven kids out to relatives, and went up there and worked in the mining camp, I guess it was in cooking.
Could very, what was her name?
What was that?
What was her name?
Well, she was only up there from 4 to 8. Her name was Nelson also, just, it was just a coincidence, but, and then she was up there just for, 3 or 4 years until she could earn enough money to bring the family back together again, and down there in back, and she moved back to Bothell.
Do you remember what years that took place?
It was 1904 to 1907.
Well, that was before my time.
Yeah, right, that's what I thought, but I just, as I understood it, maybe that company had been there, Nelson Brothers.
Could very well have been, and the people I remember, the Nelsons I remember, are could very well be left over from that. That first Nelson Brothers group that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They did a lot of mining, and like I said, they did some. They had a company delivering water in town, and they did some freighting.
I know she brought back a pound of my father's stuff later on, about a three-quarter ounce gold nugget that we've had all that time.
Wonderful.
And it's kind of a nice piece to wear around my wife's neck.
Sure, you bet. That's very nice. Have you ever been over to Nome?
No, no. I'm looking forward to it one of these days, though.
Well, there's no time like the present.
Right. Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you for the call. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah. Say, the fellow that just called, he was asking about Nelson's that delivered water. The man's name was Grant Nelson, and his wife was named Etta Nelson. Bill, do you remember him?
You bet I do.
Yeah, okay.
I believe they're living down in southeastern Alaska now.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they are.
Uh-huh.
Say, Bill, if you do talk about the newspaper on this show or a later show, you might mention the glue pot.
Oh, certainly.
That was Wall Street for the Nome Nugget. That's where all the money changed hands.
That's
right?
True. That's true.
Right. You had your carriers. And you had your street sellers, and everybody had to turn their money in.
That's right.
And so everybody went to the glue pot, which was owned by, can you remember who it was?
Do you remember?
Nick.
That's right, Nick. And what was his partner?
I can't remember his partner.
George.
Yeah, George. Nick Simeon.
That's right.
Okay.
All right, Bill. You have a good memory.
Okay, real fast. I just wanted to mention that the glue pot was Wall Street for the Nome Nugget.
Okay.
Okay. That's where all the paper boys got together, and we all split up our money.
That's right.
Okay.
Okay, Bill.
Well, tell them about that.
I will.
Bye.
Thank you. Tell us about that, Bill.
Well, the glue pot was right next door. Interesting name. The glue pot was kind of a melting pot of Nome's Front Street. The back room was where the old fellas played Pan. Pan was an old card game that has been around a long time, and it's one of the favorites among the miners. It's a little different from anything else, any other kind of a game. I guess it's about as close to Pinochle as anything else. But the front was then. It was a place where people could come in, kids, old people, anybody could come in. They could sit in there and relax. And George and Nick had ice cream, and they had sandwiches, and they had all kinds of fancy stuff, you know, things that you couldn't get in a normal store. One of my grandfather's big things in his store was he ordered and bought special foods for the different nationalities of people that were there in Nome. And he would have special Greek foods and Italian foods and Turkish, and you name it. If there was somebody there that wanted something, he'd order it. He'd have it in stock for him. Well, the glue pot would always have it. The glue pot got it from my grandfather, of course, but then they would serve it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was nice, you know. It was a kind of a community effort. The glue pot is a different kind of a place. You don't find places like that anymore.
I see. So this is where you congregated and divvied up the
dollars and cents, eh?
Well, you see, one kid would have been awarded the a route. That was his route. Now, he took care of it any way he wanted to. He was given so many newspapers, and he had so many that he had to deliver that were on, you know, regular subscription. The rest of them, he sold and did anything he wanted with them, but he had to bring back the money. Well, he would divvy up, or he would farm out certain parts of that route to other kids. So we developed a businessman. Right. The kids would then set up their sub routes, you might say. And within those routes, the kids were out selling their newspapers. And, well, before they came back, they'd have to all congregate at the glue pot, give all their money to the guy that had the real route. And he'd bring the money in into the Nugget and check out. Or he'd either into the Nugget, or if it was after 6 o'clock, he'd bring it to the house and check out there.
Now, did he keep the profit, or did he give everything to the Nugget and then get the profit back? How did that work?
It didn't matter. You see, as long as we got, we sold the paper for 15 cents,
mm-hmm.
but we gave 5 cents to the delivery boy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, how the boy delivered, you know, divided that 5 cents up with the other kids that he had working for him, that depended on their agreement. So mm-hmm. we didn't get involved in that at all. But he could either just give us the 10 cents for the paper, for the number of papers that he didn't return, or mm-hmm. give it all to us, and we'd give it back to him. It mm-hmm. didn't matter. You know, different kids did their thing in different ways.
I see.
If they were good at adding and subtracting, they liked to do their own, and that was fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let's see. We've jumped around at a lot of different things here, and let's see. We went from basketball. We went to the newspaper. We went to laying the transmission line across the Seward Peninsula. And we've had a couple of interesting phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
One more interesting thing that I really want to do here is tell you about one of my sponsors, or maybe even two. And the sponsor I want to tell you about first, Bill, is B&L Pawn Shop. And that, of course, is Bill and LaVon Tufford over there. I want to say howdy to those folks at B&L Pawn Shop. And they're located at the corner of Gaffney and Cushman. And a lot of people like to refer to them as the most unpredictable variety store in Fairbanks. And I have commented that that's kind of an understatement. It's more like having a giant garage sale in one room, and that one-stop shopping will get you everything. I'll just give you an idea of what they've got over there at B&L Pawn Shop at the corner of Gaffney and Cushman. They have jewelry, clocks, stereos, headphones, guns, scopes, winches, propane bottles, tools, hats, musical instruments, cameras, TVs, radios, typewriters, and the list goes on and on and on, and in fact, you can get anything at B&L Pawn. B&L traditionally has offered tremendous savings, but in addition, if you tell Killer, you know my friend Killer over there, you heard it on KFAR, she'll even sweeten the deal. And if you tell her you heard it from Jim on Alaska Gold Trails, well, she'll even sweeten it more. And once again, if your money's a little tight, they'll be happy to help you out. Bring in anything you feel is of value or use, and the folks at B&L will loan you the money to get through to better days. Or if you sell items on consignment, they'll work with you on that too. So if you're looking for anything from snowshoes to diamond rings, see the folks at B&L Pawn. They're located at 605 Gaffney. Jim, Bruce, and Killer will be happy to deal. And keep this in mind, folks, Killer never says no. She'll sell anything but the chandelier, and only then because it's attached. However, ask her. You never know. That's B&L Pawn, corner of Gaffney and Cushman. Their phone number is 452-6491. And they're open between 9 and 7, Monday through Friday, 9 to 5 on Saturday, and 12 to 5 on Sunday. And remember, tell Killer you heard it here on Alaska Gold Trails, and she'll sweeten the deal. Another one of the people who has supported Alaska Gold Trails through the years here is Gabe's Truck and Auto, a company that I've been dealing with for a good many years personally. And they'd like you to know that whether it's an auto or a light truck or motorhome or even a big rig for the best service in town, you can get it right there at Gabe's Truck and Auto Repair. And you know, I had to point out last week that the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce a couple of years ago gave Gabe's Truck and Auto their prestigious Raven About Fairbanks Award for providing the best vehicle service in Fairbanks. Gabe's has 2 large shops and 8 mechanics on hand to serve you. With that much attention, folks, you know you'll get fast, courteous service and have your vehicle back in a hurry. In addition to engine and general vehicle maintenance. Gabe's can also repair automatic transmissions, realign front ends, and repair mountain balance tires. New and rebuilt engines come with a 12-month or 12,000-mile warranty. As you can see, Gabe's is a one-stop service center. And if you need an IM inspection, how many times have I told you this? If you need an IM inspection, Gabe's Truck and Auto are one of the first people to initiate the no-pass, no-pay policy. That's right, folks. If you don't pass, you don't pay at Gabe's Truck and Auto. And I've also said this on a number of occasions, that Gabe's has a fabulous towing service. He has three wreckers on hand to serve you, and they can tow any size rig. And I want you to put this number in your glove box in case you have an emergency. Their number over there for their towing service is 456-6156. Once again, it's 456-6156. So put that in your glove compartment. As soon as it starts snowing, you may just find out you need that in a hurry. So you can turn your rag into a ride at Gabe's Truck and Auto, located off Van Horn Road near Metro Fields. Precisely, that's 2058 Donald Road. Or give them a call. Once again, their number is 456-6156.
Hello, this is Dorothy from Purdue's Jewelry. We're having our 28th anniversary sale from now until the end of August. Purdue's Jewelry has been offering the interior honest, reliable sales and service for 28 years. We want to thank you with a something for everyone's sale, with discounts as high as 50% off. We have Black Hills Gold, Gold Nugget Jewelry, Ivory, 14-karat chain, jade, hematite, colored stone jewelry, class rings, and wedding sets. See you soon at Purdue's Jewelry, open 7 days a week in the Shoppers Forum Mall.
Once again, folks, we're here on KFAR Radio, 660 on your radio dial with Alaska Gold Trails. Our guest this afternoon is Bill Boucher. If you have a question of Bill or want to make a comment on Alaska Gold Trails, our phone number is 479-TALK. That's 479-8255, so give us a call. And, Bill, we have spanned quite a spectrum here. We're going to have to clean this up a little bit. We were talking once again about the transmission line across the Seward Peninsula in attempt to achieve worldwide communications, and they finished that, setting the poles for that line. What year was that?
1866.
And can you recall some of the members that were on that team that set the poles for that line?
Oh, offhand, I couldn't tell you.
There was one key member, and that was Daniel B. Libby.
That's right, Libby. Yeah. Okay.
And, you know, I got to tell the listening audience, Bill and I were flying up around the Seward Peninsula here the last week or so, and he took me over the Nyukluk River.
Nyukluk.
Oh, I'm sorry, Bill. You corrected me on that one last time. Nyukluk. Anyway, during the setting of the poles through that area, Daniel B. Libby took a pan, a frying pan, and he panned some of the gravels in the Nyukluk.
Close enough.
And he found gold in the gravels. Now, upon arriving at the coast, apparently there was a ship waiting for him and his crew, and it was called the Andrea. Are you familiar with that, Bill?
No, that's your story.
Oh, that's my story. You had another ship waiting for him. At any rate, they learned there that there was no longer a need for putting the line across the Bering Sea, if I'm not... Bering Straits there, because Western Union had achieved laying a line across the Atlantic Ocean. Well, what happened there is that, of course, this crew of men left the area, but Daniel B. Libby never forgot, Phil, the fact that he had found gold on the Nyukluk River. And as a result, when the strike was made in the Klondike, it started a kind of a gold fever throughout the conterminous United States, which led a lot of people to leave for the Klondike. But in contrast, Daniel B. Libby got a crew of men and some equipment, and he and his crew with his equipment came back to the Nyukluk River, where he set up a camp. And he extracted $75,000 worth of gold from the Nyukluk. They arrived there in August, and they extracted that gold before freeze-up that year. Now, that was $20 gold, if I'm not mistaken. Well, what happened, the result of that was that as far as I remember, is that a camp grew there. A lot of the miners came into the area, started mining in the area, and one of the miners that came in was an aging prospector by the name of John Hummel. And John Hummel at that time was suffering from scurvy. And as a result of that, some of the miners in the area suggested that John go on down to the beach and soak up some salt air and some sunshine because everybody knew that was good for scurvy. So John went down to the beach at the present site of Nome. It was John Hummel who was playing in the sand at the beach who discovered that the sands were laced with gold. And that was the story behind the discovery of the gold at Nome, or at least one of them. I also know another version, and I imagine we could get versions going here. I wasn't there, but I took it as truth from what I've read over the years. Anyway, so I just thought I'd bring that to your attention, Bill, so that in the future, if anybody asks the question, how was the discovery made, at least you could parrot something, whether it was a lie or not, I'm not sure.
Well, how did the reindeer herder fit into all that?
What? Yeah, the reindeer. I don't know. Reindeer, you tell us. Bill, that was your story.
No, that was your story also.
Oh, it was? Did I say something about reindeer herders? Tell us. Now, before we get on to the reindeer herders, I want to get back. Have we finished? We haven't finished about the newspapers on the Seward Peninsula. Now, we got to the newspaper and the fact that Western Union was laying a line across the Seward Peninsula. How do you know all this? Why did you know that they laid that line across the Seward? Just because you lived there or because you did some other activity?
Well, actually, I learned about it through the University of Alaska archives. While I was there, I did a story for Quill magazine on Northwestern Alaska newspapers and publications. And in doing my research, I discovered that the first newspaper printed in that part of the world was called the Eskimo. And it was spelled E-S-Q-U-I-M-O-U-X, the French spelling of the word, printed by Mr. Libby at Grantley Harbor, the year they wintered up there. It was done on a typewriter right there in camp, and I guess from the story, they did one copy each time and passed it around. Several years later, back at the home office, they took those newspapers and they actually printed them and sent them out to the members of the party so that they would have, you know, a real copy of what they had during the winter. And it turned out to be quite a historical piece.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's how I discovered learned about the Western Union Project. And during that investigation, I became so interested in it that I did another story just on the Alaska portion of the project. So that's how I became familiar with it.
I see. Well, let's carry that on when we come back after a couple of announcements. Bill, I'd like to once again launch into some of the other topics that we've discussed today and see if we can't clean them up and bring them together in
okay.
one focal point.
Well, one more thing, if I might. Along with that, that's how I learned what all of those steel poles were doing all across the Seward Peninsula that I had seen, you know, for many years as a kid. I didn't know what they were. You know, I knew that they were, you know, telegraph line, but I didn't know who put them up. Most of them were all bent, rusted, and bent over, and we used to shoot the insulators.
Typical kid stuff, huh?
That's right. Typical kid stuff.
I wasn't aware that they were steel.
They were steel, yeah.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Steel poles.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this was a major project. This wasn't a very simple project that somebody just went out in the brush and cut trees and stuck up poles in,
was it? Imagine that a lot of them were wooden poles. But you see, the Seward Peninsula doesn't have trees.
Oh. As a matter of fact, I didn't see any very big trees when I was there this past week.
That's right. The closest, well, I'll take that back. There are trees, but they don't go all the way across. Some parts of the Seward Peninsula do have small trees.
Well, I didn't want to argue with you, Bill, but go ahead with your story.
Story's complete.
Oh, okay. We'll be back with Bill in just a minute, right after a couple of messages here.
Folks, we have over $9 million worth of cars and trucks. We're flat overstocked. Now, the only way I know how to solve this problem, pretend like it's October and start our year-end clearance sale now. Now, we have hundreds of cars and trucks to choose from. Don't pay any attention to the sticker price. Just make us an offer. We will meet or beat any legitimate deal you can get from anybody, any place. Now, you can save thousands of dollars, but you've got to do it right now.
Oh, it's time to tell you a little bit about my newest sponsor, and that's Macaulay's Reprographics Incorporated. McCauley's is located at 721 Gaffney. And their phone number is 452-8141. And we know McCauley's as the supplier for engineering and architectural supplies. They do printing, and they have maps there, both of mostly of Canadian maps. They also provide us with the surveying equipment, both in purchases and in rentals, and they service this equipment as well. I'd also like to point out that they have a complete line of drafting materials, including templates, pens, pencils, and the professional equipment necessary for doing the map making and drafting in the engineering areas. In addition to that, in the geologist and the miner and the prospector might like to know that they not only carry the hip chains necessary for measuring out claim lines, but they also carry quality compasses over there. So, if you're looking for quality equipment in drafting and art engineering and architecture, it's McCauley's Reprographics. They're located at 721 Gaffney. Their phone number is 452-8141. Ask for Becky over there or Alfred. They'll be glad to help you out with your needs. That's McCauley's Reprographics, 721 Gaffney. And tell them you heard Jim talking about them on Alaska Gold Trail. Another one of the sponsors here on Alaska Gold Trail has been with me for 2 years now. It's my friend Robbie Ginther over at Tip Top Chevrolet, and they're located at 1960 South Cushman. Their phone number is 452-8211. And I'd like to point out that Tip Top Chevrolet Buick has been in business for 32 years, and it's been owned and operated by three generations of Ginthers, and Robbie Ginther is the general manager today. I'd also like to make comment about some of the other people that work over there, and the fact that these people have been with Tip Top Chevrolet for a number of years. They're long-timers over there, and they'll give you great top-quality service. The sales manager over there is Jim Brown, and that's in new car sales, used cars, Elmer Ostlund. He's there to help you out. He's been with Tip Top Chevrolet 6 years, so stop over there if you're in the need of a used car and talk to Elmer. Over in the service department, the service manager is Randy Meadows, and he's been there for over 2.5 years. So once again, the people at Tip Top Chevrolet have been there a long time and can give you quality service. In the body shop manager is Randy Mayhew, and of course, Randy has been with Tip Top Chevrolet for over 6 years. So once again, you want Tip Top quality, it's Tip Top Chevrolet Buick, located at 1916 South Cushman. Their phone number, once again, 452-8211, and you tell them that you heard Jim Madonna talking about them on Alaska Gold Trail. They'll like it, you'll like it, and they'll get an increase of pay. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Bill's still there.
Yeah, Bill's still here. You got a quick minute.
Okay, real fine. Bill, tell them about the ditch lines. Where the ditch lines where the water runs around the side of the mountain.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, right. But you remember, Roy, you could see the water coming from one direction, and you wanted to know how it got around the mountain?
Oh, you bet.
Okay. Tell them about how the gold miners needed water to keep their bridges going.
All right.
Okay, good.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you for the call. Bill, before we get into the ditch line, that's a pretty in-depth topic. Yeah, it is. Let's have one more call and see what happens there, and then I want to finish up what happened in the high school basketball game. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Jim, question for you guys. Just wanted to see if you called, this happened 1927, 1930, somewhere along in there. A woman walked from New York City back to Russia. She was never good, and she just decided that she wanted to go home. And the last scene of her, according to the information I had, was she was walking the beach north of Nome. I just wonder if you recall that story and can tell us anything about it.
Well, I remember several stories about people doing that. Of course, I wasn't there 1927, 1930. I wasn't even born until 1934. But there were a number of stories about that. But my recollection is they happened later. There were quite a number of Russians that came to Nome in the early 30s, trying to get away from the Bolsheviks. And at any rate, quite a number of them came to Nome and were taken in through customs there at Nome by the Coast Guard, because we didn't have a customs person there at the time, as I recall. And later on, a number of them tried to go back to Russia by walking across the ice. And you're right, they were never seen again.
I was just thinking here the last few days that, with all this back and forth business across the strait here lately, with all the Russians there are in the country and so forth, might be a ripe time to inquire and see if, you know, what might be found out of it. Her name was Lillian Alling.
Lillian Alling.
Uh-huh.
I don't know, I don't remember that name at all.
Uh-huh.
But there were a number of them. Quite a number of them came to Nome across, you know, by boat and asked for asylum. My grandfather in those days had a trading ship that plied the coast of Siberia.
This made the papers quite a bit. I've seen old clippings and so forth on this. She was followed across the country for a couple of years. She got to White Horse at Dawson City, I believe, walked the old telegraph trail and so forth.
Uh-huh.
And then passed up an old boat and went down to Yukon. Finally, let's just say the last scene of her, she was walking north of Nome on the beach there.
I'll be darned.
We just assumed that she probably got someone to take her across. But inquiries have been made through the years, and no one's ever turned anything up on the Russian side. I thought, well, this might be the time to kind of pursue mm-hmm. that.
Well, at that time, the Eskimos were going back and forth between the Big and Little Diomede, so she shouldn't have had any trouble getting across if she wanted to.
But I just thought perhaps you might remember that particular instance.
Boy, I don't remember that name, but I do remember hearing stories about people, you know, trying to get across.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thanks for the call. 30 seconds or less. Tell us about, Bill, tell us about going to Anchorage and playing basketball. You got 30 seconds, you just used five.
Well, I only made it 1 year. But we did take the second class tournament in at the Fur Rendezvous. And then we played the first class team, which was Anchorage, of course, at that time. Anchorage only had one high school at that time. We played them, beat them once, and then they beat us twice.
Thanks, Bill Boucher, for joining me here on Alaska Gold Trails. We'll have you back soon, and we're going to finish up the story of Nome, Alaska with you.
Thanks, Jim.
Folks, you're listening to Alaska Gold Trails here on KFAR Radio 660 on your radio dial. This is Jim Madonna. Thank you for joining us.
From ABC News, I'm Doug Limerick. Here's what one top economist thinks about today's surge on Wall Street.
It looks to me like happy days are here again.
Ed Yardeni of Prudential Base after the Dow Jones Industrials went up a whopping 56 points to close at 2734, which is an all-time record high. The previous all-time high was set 2 years ago tomorrow. Economist Yardeni was asked why this was a banner day for the stock market.
Only a few weeks ago, there was a lot of concern that we were falling into a recession, and instead the economy surprised most economists and showed a lot of recent indicators pointing to more growth up ahead.
Of course, the last time the market hit a record high, there was a big crash 2 months later. More news after this.
We'd like to cut you in on a cut of beef that can cut your costs, called Chuck. Now, you may know Chuck from Chuck Roasts or